Our travels this Lent takes us to some unusual places. That is, if we are willing to be led by the Spirit. Moments of hunger and self-doubt, temptation and need will tap on our shoulders. It is not just about the bacon that looks terribly good on Fridays, or the deprivation we feel in not binge-watching Netflix or YouTube during those evening hours that we are so desperate to kill. It's more than the sum of the extra minutes we spend saying a decade of the rosary or attending daily mass. It is not the latte money that now goes into an empty Starbucks cup to be donated to the Catholic Relief Service's rice bowl that we brought home. It is not just the lonely desert. There is also an opportunity for a closer companionship with God. Abraham gets his starry sky promise and his fiery vision. Our manifestations may be humbler or grander still. Yet if we walk this road faithfully, epiphanies are a guarantee. And now a caution. What we do with this season can be a source of spiritual distraction as much as it is an exercise in soul shaping. We may become so focused on what we have sacrificed or taken on for 40 days that our Lenten practice becomes all about us. We can feel pride in our steely resolve or shame for our surprisingly flimsy willpower. We may even imagine that God is impressed by how generous we are with our resources and our time. Doesn't God just love that 15 minutes of morning contemplation with us? Really? Is that all we think it takes? Lent is not a spiritual gym where one devises a workout plan with a trainer and then watches our biceps pop. Nor is it metaphysical therapy aimed at stomping out our worst traits. The part of Lent that is about doing or not doing things is the earthly part. The real work is truly being a disciple of Jesus, and that means we have to change to be more like Jesus. We have to give up our habits of gossiping, overeating, bigoted comments, and the negativity one can elicit. Our spiritual reading should challenge us to change, to pray more intently, to fast from legitimate pleasures, to give more generously to the church and to the poor. The question that immediately arises is, why do I have to change? The answer is rock solid. We are incomplete people. If we don't change to be more like Jesus, we will slide back into self-centered thoughts and behaviors. We will be the people our consumerist society wants us to be, with minds set on earthly things, mired in a blissful state of stagnation. We either become true children of the Father, or we become slaves of sin. Walt Disney said it well. Change is inevitable. Growth is optional. Part of our Lenten travels brings us to Mount Tabor, where we are told that Peter, James, and John accompanied Jesus as they trudged up this high mountain. While there, Jesus was transfigured before the apostles. This means that Jesus has become transparent to them. They can see Jesus for who he really is. Despite Jesus' face becoming radiant and his clothing becoming dazzling white, as no fool on earth could bleach them, in and through his humble humanity, his divinity shines forth. Even with the proximity of his divinity, it in no way compromises the integrity of his humanity, but rather makes it shine in greater beauty. This is the New Testament version of the burning bush. If he is only divine, then he does not touch us. If he is only human, then he can't save us. His splendor consists in the coming together of the two natures without mixing, mingling, or confusion. Another point to be mentioned, although often overlooked, is that this vision came after a very difficult climb up this mountain. In our own lives, suffering and difficulties usually convey a new vision, opens new vistas, and brings a deeper understanding. Of course, suffering is not something we enjoy, to be sure, but it is part of the climb. Do you want to see? Then be willing to make the climb with Jesus. He gives us vision if we climb. He gives us vision if we are immersed in his word, which is scripture and church teaching. If we but take up our cross and follow him through his passion, death, and resurrection, his greatest vision lies ahead for us. Nevertheless, we must go back and remember what Jesus was doing on the mountain. He went up the mountain with his disciples to pray. That is, in the words of St. John Vianney, to be in union with God. Now, the person of Jesus was always in union with God, being that Jesus is divine. What he was doing is bringing his human nature more in union with God, his Father. In a sense, he was using this time on the mountain, as he did on many mountains, to perfect that hypostatic union. The secret is in the prayer that Jesus later taught the apostles on another mountain, the Mount of Olives. It's the prayer that Jesus, on the night before he suffered, prayed in the Garden of Olives. It is the prayer, "Thy will be done. Not my will, but thine be done, O Father." It is the prayer of Jesus, the suffering servant, the suffering son. Jesus made that prayer, that commitment, the center of his being. And so should we.